This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to Ask Us Anything, where the Frequent Miler team answers your questions live.
Frequent Milers, Ask Us Anything starts now.
All right. Welcome, everyone. So don't forget, wherever you're watching or listening to this, don't forget to like the video, give us a thumbs up, leave us a review or your feedback. We always love to hear from you. And speaking of hearing from you, you can join our Frequent Miler Insiders Facebook group to ask and answer questions anytime you want, or go to frequentmiler.com/subscribe to join our email list. And then again, follow us on all the various social media so you never miss out on a post in your email inbox, on our website, when we go live, all that fun stuff. All right. Tonight, we've got a couple of questions already queued up. So I think Stephen is going to kick us off with a couple of questions to start out before our regular moderator, Carrie, jumps in after him. So go ahead, Stephen. Take it over.
So this first one's from Ryan, who commented on our Ask Us Anything post on the blog. So he said, Nick, you probably know Turkish Airline rewards redemptions better than anyone else in the world. Would you recommend to your loyal readers, like me, to do the Turkish Airlines 1 million mile challenge? I get a sense from your post that finding redemptions can be a bit of a needle in a haystack. He mostly flies flies to Asia and South America with some domestic flights sprinkled in. He'd hate to have the million miles and struggle to use them. He doesn't mind grinding a bit to find flights, but his quick peek at seats.airway shows almost no availability to Asia from North America at a saver level. He'd hate to burn his million miles on just three overpriced business class seats because there's nothing to get. So, should he do it?
Okay, so if you have to ask this question, the answer is probably no. And I'm going to say that as thank you for the compliment saying that I know more about booking Turkish than many other people. Believe it or not, that's still not very much because Turkish is notoriously difficult to work with. And so, you know, if you find the award you want available on their website, great. Then it's relatively simple, so long as their website doesn't break and the button to submit payment doesn't disappear, which has happened for like months and months at a time before in the past. We got a comment from someone the other day that they aren't able to find any Star Alliance awards through the Turkish website. I haven't yet had a chance to double check on that. I should. So I don't know if they're showing any Star Alliance availability or not on the website. And if they're not, then you're going to have to call, assuming you want to fly a Star Alliance carrier, you're going to have to call Turkish over the phone. And that is really a crapshoot. Very unlikely you're going to find an agent that knows how to book a Star Alliance award. You might. If you do, great. You've won the lottery. Pat yourself on the back. Otherwise, you're going to have to call and call again, and maybe you'll find someone, maybe you won't. You can try emailing all the various ticket offices. If you Google it, you can find email addresses for all the different ticket offices around the world. And so what I have sometimes done is just sent the same email copy and paste to like a dozen different ticket offices all over the place, not just in the United States, because I figure worst case scenario, if two or three of them get back to me, only one of them is probably going to be able to put the award on hold. And even if more than one does, they just won't call back and pay the ticket, and eventually the hold will fall off. So at any rate, all of those things are things that you'll get to know as you get to using Turkish Miles and Smiles. But if you're not at that point yet, then I would really, really caution you to think twice about doing this promotion, because it can be quite a struggle to use. If you've got a lot of flights to Hawaii from where you live, you might be able to get tons of great value out of this. And in some cases, it's a good value to fly Turkish Airlines, but it's a real struggle if ultimately you want to fly on Star Alliance carriers. So I would say, is it worth it? I mean, it certainly could be, but for the cost that you're going to have to put into it and the hassle of redeeming the miles, I don't feel like there's enough return on investment unless you just want to travel to the six continents because it's kind of fun. And that's okay. It is kind of fun. And it's fun to do these challenges. And so if you're into that, great. Otherwise, I would probably say I don't think it's right for most people.
Right. Thank you. And thanks, Stephen, for feeding a pre-prepared question for us. Here's another one that we got on the blog ahead of time. If you find yourself points and miles bankrupt at 524 and an Amex pop-up jail, what can one do to get enough points to take a nice trip? Let's bump this question to Greg.
Okay. Yeah. So if you find yourself unable to get approved for new Amex cards, well, first of all, just because you get the pop-up saying you're not eligible for a welcome bonus for a particular card does not mean you'll get it for all cards. They tend to, at a big level, treat consumer cards separately from business cards. So if you've been trying consumer cards, it might be worth trying business cards and see how things look there. But also, even within consumer, within business, it varies with between cards what happens. So you're not necessarily down and out with Amex, just because you get in pop-up prison for some things. Of course, there are other card issuers too. So obviously there's Chase, but look also to, less obvious ones that also have transferable currencies. You've got Capital One Miles, you have Citi Thank You points with the Strata Premier card. You've got Wells Fargo now. So there's actually quite a few Wells Fargo cards that, as long as you have one card that has the ability to transfer points, you could get other cards that earn cash back, for example, and move those rewards to the card that has transferable points and get more transferable points that way. So all those ways are still on the table, even if you're in pop-up prison.
I always forget about Wells Fargo. All right, Stephen, on to you. What's the FM team's thoughts on buying groups to hit massive spending limits for sign-up bonuses?
They can potentially be a very good option. For kind of, I guess, regular buying groups where you're buying like physical products and either having them sent to you or you're having them sent to some other like warehouse or something like that. Those ones can be a little bit more risky because it's involving like physical goods that in many cases you won't ever actually see or touch. There is risk that packages can go missing along the way. Packages can go missing when they're being delivered to the warehouses. Quite often, it seems like a lot of the deals will be below costs. That's where you're going to be paying more than in theory you'll get back cash wise, but that can still be worth it for the bonus that you'll earn on your credit card. I'm more familiar with the gift card side of it, and so that can also be a pretty good way. That comes with its own risks as well. But I'd recommend reading a post that Tim had written, which is all about buying groups, because that kind of goes into a lot more details and provides some information about the various different buying groups, a lot of the risks involved.
Are there any of you who have not used buying groups? I think all of you have, or no? Yeah. All right. So, I mean, the short answer is that they feel okay enough to do it themselves, I suppose.
So long as you're kind of aware of the risks and it's best not to dive in too deeply. Now is probably a good time of the year to get started because you can start getting a bit more familiar with it because it's usually in like Q4 from like October to December where you'll see a lot more buying opportunities because of all the like Black Friday sales and things like that, whether you're doing physical goods or gift cards or whatever, then you'll find a lot more deals in the last few months of the year. So getting used to how things work right now, getting a procedure in place, getting like tracking spreadsheets set up so that way you know what you've bought, what you're expecting reimbursement for and things like that. This is a great time to start.
Yeah, I think if the question is coming from a place of concern about the issuer not liking it, like that's not an issue at all. I wouldn't be concerned at all about the issuer having a problem with you using your card. So I don't think that buying things for a buying group is a problem in terms of like, is it going to be a red flag for a shutdown from your card issuer? Probably not in most cases, depending on, I guess, if you're buying lots of gift cards, but products, probably not. The place that I'd be concerned more about is the risk. Like, don't overextend yourself and buy $100,000 worth of stuff if you don't have $100,000 to pay the credit card bill with. Buy an amount that you're comfortable with that you know you can float if it takes a little while to get your money back or if something goes wrong.
All right, great. Thank you. All right, so this next one is for you, Tim. I have the Capital One Venture X and Business Spark Miles Select. I'm canceling my Venture X. Do I have to move points to the Spark Miles Select before canceling to retain the points?
As far as I know, yes, you still do. If you cancel a card, they don't automatically transfer over. And I don't know about, I'm not familiar if there's any special stuff around the Spark Miles Select, but in general, if you cancel a Capital One card, you do need to move the miles before you cancel. Otherwise, you're going to forfeit the miles.
All right.
Unless you're a New
useful.
York resident, in which case I think you still get 90 days, right? But
Unless you're a New York resident. So New York, on the one hand, Nick doesn't get car rental insurance, but he does get 90 days to move his canceled Capital One points. So,
But Tim's right. Move them first.
all right. Thank you. Now we're gonna go back to Greg. This person says, okay, still confused about the Sapphire. If I got the Sapphire with 100K 2 months ago, do I still qualify for the new bonus if I haven't hit the bonus yet? Greg.
Chase's rules about whether you're, excuse me, whether you're eligible for a bonus have nothing to do with whether you've, well, let me say it a different way. If you recently applied for the Sapphire, which it sounds like you did, and you're talking about getting I assume a Sapphire Preferred, a Sapphire Reserve rather
Yeah,
than.
let's be clear. So they signed up for the Sapphire Preferred, and now they want the Sapphire Reserve,
Yeah,
right?
that's what it sounds like.
That's what it sounds
So the initial information we got made it sound like that might be possible. But most people's experience, it seems like, is that if you have a Sapphire Preferred card open, they're not going to approve you for a Sapphire Reserve card. So I don't think you have a chance of getting the Sapphire Reserve consumer card bonus. You can apply for the Sapphire Reserve business card, though. That has nothing to do with whether or not you have a Sapphire Preferred personal card.
Right. Thank
As a
you.
quick asterisk onto that, assuming that my microphone's actually working, the I believe most there have been a few people that we've seen that did, and I don't know about the recent one. That's a pretty recent, but that's a pretty recent approval and welcome offer in terms of having actually been approved for and gotten the welcome offer for the Sapphire Preferred within the last few months. There are definitely people that have the preferred open that have been approved for the reserve. The one nice, it's by Greg's exactly right though, it's not necessarily the rule or common, even though Chase kind of made it seem like it wasn't going to be a factor going forward. However, it seems like overall Chase has kind of started this new Amex-like pop-up that is supposed to advise you whether or not you're eligible for the welcome offer on a new card. Now, the pop-up seems to be working for most people in regards to the Sapphire stuff. The problem is you may get rejected with a hard pull before you get to the pop-up. So there is some, there is a little bit of a roll of the dice. I personally probably would steer away from it and go for the business right now, like Greg recommended, but there is some positive experience with both getting warned before you submit the application that you're not eligible and also getting approved with the preferred. Although the other part of that is that you've gotten it very, very recently. So that probably will work against you in terms of the infinite Chase wheel of destiny.
Pre-pop-up poll.
Pre-pop, you might be in pre-pop-up prison or pre-pop-up prison.
Pre-pop-up purgatory?
Yeah, pre-pop-up purgatory prison.
Something like
So I
that.
guess the summary is it's theoretically possible, but it's very unlikely.
Yes.
Yeah, I
That's
think
a
so. If
good.
you if you very recently got the Sapphire Preferred like that with 100K offer, I don't think I've seen any data points of somebody that got it that recently and also got the reserve, I don't think.
Greg is good at concisifying for us. Thank you. All right, Greg, back to you. Or wait. Yes, I'll go back to you because I can't remember where we were at. Are you surprised that the multipliers on the refreshed CSR didn't change more substantially, particularly the dining staying the same compared to the 4x on Amex Gold and 5x on Citi Prestige?
No, I'm not surprised about that because, I believe that Chase was trying to basically save money with the changes they made, and they, I mean, they increased a couple of categories to 4X, but they made those categories much more narrow than they were before. And so I think they're hoping that they're going to have less spend at high multiples than before, and that it's going to save them money. So I'm not surprised that they're not competing on the dining thing, especially, I mean, the Prestige card isn't even available new and hasn't been for a long time. So the only one they'd be comparing to for that, I think, is the Amex Gold and some more minor players. And yeah, doesn't surprise me.
All right. Yeah. Okay, Nick, this one belongs to you, I think. For the JetBlue 25 for 25, you can't do multi-city points bookings on one PNR. Will sequential one-ways be protected if you follow the MCT between one-ways?
Yeah, so the minimum connection time between the one ways. I have no idea. It's a good question. So what this person's wondering is if they book a bunch of one-way flights on the same day, so ignoring whether or not these routes exist for sure, let's say they booked something like Hartford, Connecticut to LaGuardia to Orlando to wherever they go. No, rather Hartford to LaGuardia to Fort Lauderdale to Nassau, Bahamas. As all separate one ways. If their flight from LaGuardia to Fort Lauderdale gets delayed, are they going to protect them on a later connecting flight to the Bahamas if those were booked separately as separate tickets? And I have no idea. I don't know whether they will or not. I'm not sure how JetBlue handles that. So that's a very good question to ask. I just don't know the answer.
Yeah, maybe you'll find out.
Maybe, yeah,
So,
you know, I don't, I didn't have any plans to book separate one ways on the same day. I don't think I lined any of that up. So go ahead. You have some insight here, Tim?
no, I don't have any insight. I have less insight actually that I was going to
Oh.
ask a question out of. So
Okay.
JetBlue doesn't allow you to make multi-city bookings where you can actually.
There's no, yeah, it's just round trip or one way are the two different options on the website. So, it's interesting because it's interesting you ask that because no, JetBlue doesn't have the option on their website to do that. They'll show some flights with one connection. I don't, and some with two connections when it's like JFK and Boston, but not very many multi-connection routes. But I found that through Google Flights, I saw some itineraries that I didn't find through the JetBlue website that were through like third-party OTAs. And so I assume that behind the scenes, those third-party OTAs are either somehow able to put it together or they're booking separate tickets, and I don't know how they're combining things, but I did find things that weren't available on JetBlue.com on other sites. Whether or not it's safe to book those, I just don't know. That's a very good
No.
question. I probably won't push it that close because I got a family of four, so I'm probably not going to push anything close enough for that to be relevant for me. But that's a really good question. If anybody listening has insight, please write something in the chat box. Go to Frequent Miler Insiders and ask this question there because I can almost guarantee there's got to be someone there that's familiar enough with JetBlue to know exactly how they handle it.
Yeah.
Well, and I did just look up, and just to another asterisk to the question, I did just look up JetBlue.com does seem to have a multi-city
Oh, does
tool
it?
now.
Oh,
Yeah.
maybe.
So
Yeah,
I don't
there
know
you
if
go.
that doesn't, if that's new or if it does. Like I said, I've never tried to book any sort of stuff with JetBlue. But anyway,
Good to
still go
know.
to FMI. I would love to know if somebody else, that seems weird that you couldn't do multi-city itineraries on one, but
Yeah.
I
Well,
don't
there you
know.
go. There you have it. Maybe you can.
Not.
All right, Steven, and like this video. Just do it. Don't make me ask you twice. All right, Steven, with all this funny business that Hertz is starting to pull on phantom damage being charged by AI, are you or would you still rent from them? Steven, what do you think?
If the price was right, I would probably still risk it, but it does make me a little bit more nervous. Like, because everyone knows all the horror stories about Hertz having people arrested and things like that, because of like mismanagement in their own records that someone hasn't returned their vehicle even when they have. So that already gives people pause to book with them. I'd still potentially be okay with booking with them. But yeah, reading those articles, it does make me wonder like quite how strict they're going to be with that. Like, you would want to be doing a very clear walk around and taking videos and everything like that just to make sure that your vehicle is cleared beforehand. I'm also not sure quite how widespread that is at the moment. I wouldn't be surprised if they have edits like maybe some big airports or something like that. But for your local airports and things like that, I've no idea if they're actually rolling it out that fast. So yeah, if you're renting from JFK, maybe be a bit more cautious if they got AI there. If you're like renting from like Norfolk, Virginia or something like that, where it's much smaller, I'd be surprised if it's been rolled out that far. But I don't know, maybe they've had a big push and they're like sending it out to all of their major locations. Has anyone rented from Hertz anytime recently?
Yeah, it was a couple weeks ago, but they didn't have it where I was.
Were you
Yeah.
renting from Albany?
I rented one from Albany and one from JFK.
Oh, JFK
So
didn't have it. Okay.
Not yet at that point, though. But here's my question for everybody here. Maybe Tim's the best person to answer this, since I think you've probably made more rental damage claims than the rest of us, is my guess.
I have, probably.
Are you concerned about this? Because like, if they found damage, couldn't you just file a claim through your card and let your card pay for it?
Yeah, I have that same question. I thought about that same thing because my first response, my first response when I read about that is, wow, this is terrible. Like I read, for instance, I read one story about a guy who went through the AI thing, and he came back and there was supposedly like about a 1-inch scuff on the wheel hub that the AI found. And it was immediately before he left, immediate billing. It was $250 for the charge, another $150 administration fee, another. So the total for this little scuff was like between $400 and $500. And then he was starting to argue with them. And then they were like, well, you can get, I think it was like a 30 or 40% discount if you pay it right now.
Right,
Like, wait a minute. So this is like for negotiation? Like, what is this stuff? And I think he actually ended up kind of arguing against it. But that's the sort of stuff that makes me really nervous about it. And so there is something to your point that my second thought was exactly what Nick said, was like, well, just turn the claim in as long as you're using a card that has primary rental car insurance. Now, to be clear, I've used Chase's several times. I've never used Capital One's or any of the other people that offer primary. So I can't vouch for that, but I know Chase is very straightforward. However, that said, it is still a process. And so I don't know, like, I would say that in the early, like, to me, if this starts being deployed right widely by Hertz and other cars aren't using, or other companies aren't using them, and especially in the early stages of it being deployed, it would make me more hesitant. Not that I necessarily wouldn't, but if there's a bunch of little, if there's a bunch of car companies that are all within the same price, it would probably make me go away from Hertz as opposed to just say, oh, well, if AI gives me something, I can always bill it to Chase. But I mean, I think it's a good point that thus far I've never had any damage. When there has been claims, they've all been completely reimbursed by Chase. So it's not like I've ever been left holding the AI bag, so to speak.
Yeah, for me, like it's just the hassle that would be involved this
Hassle.
time more putting than anything. Because yeah, we
Yeah,
always
that's fair.
just use like Venture X for that coverage. And so in theory, there's no like issues in terms of being out of pocket. But yeah, just having the additional hassle of having to make the claims, and also just kind of like the bad taste that it leaves in your mouth as well, especially if you're like pretty sure that you didn't cause that damage, then knowing that they're bilking money, like even though it's not coming out of your pocket, just knowing that they're basically scamming for that kind of thing, just not a big fan of supporting that kind of thing. So
Especially when, like, that was the reason to go with Hertz before, in my mind, was like, ugh, I just want to book with the person I know I'm not going to have like shenanigans with. Okay, welcome shenanigans. Like, okay,
And I'm also not like
yep.
entirely trustworthy of how reliable AI will be for this.
Right.
Like for some
Oh,
things,
totally.
like AI can be really good and really efficient and things. But as we've seen with all the like JetBlue routings and stuff like that that ChatGPT's been pumping out, it's not always great. And so I'm wondering quite how quickly Hertz is rolling this out and how much testing's been involved as to how reliable the AI functionality is. So I guess we'll wait and see
Yeah.
further data points when people report it.
More artificial than intelligent, I fear. Anyway, Tim, have we heard any updates or ETA on the new Alaska Premium card?
No, not
All
yet.
right.
Effectively, what they've, I mean, I think it was originally like said it was going to be mid 2025, and then they've now said summer of 2025. So if you say that that's more narrow, I don't know. But they're still saying sometime during the summer, as far as I'm aware of, and we haven't heard anything more about it.
It's technically not summer yet, right?
No,
No,
it
wait,
is.
it
It
technically
is.
is.
Yep.
But we're
Yeah.
only like 10 days in, so I mean,
That's
they
true.
have time.
That's true.
Winter is coming.
If you live in New York or Michigan.
Yeah. Next week, if you live in New York.
Yeah. Winter's coming for you guys. All right. Greg, is booking Mr. and Mrs. Smith via Hyatt more expensive than booking direct? A property hinted they prefer guests to book direct than third parties, including Hyatt, suggesting that Hyatt is a third party.
Actually, this situation is complicated. So Mr. and Mrs. Smith is also a third party. So Mr. and Ms. Smith is a collection of hotels around the world that, yeah, but if you book through Mr. and Mrs. Smith or through Hyatt, which goes through Mr. and Mrs. Smith, you get some minor perks like a welcome bottle of wine or something. And that can be absolutely, that can be more expensive than going directly to the property itself to book the stay. But we don't have any way to systematically look, you know, property by property to see how often there's a price difference and what it is. But the good news is that when Hyatt took over Mr. and Mrs. Smith, at least initially, when we did look at it, they weren't charging more than Mr. and Mrs. Smith was charging. So you were getting the same price either way, whether going through Mr. and Mrs. Smith or through Hyatt. But as I said, you may have been able to get a better deal by going around both of them directly to the property. You won't earn any Hyatt points or elite status that way, but yes, it could be cheaper.
I feel like Mr. and Mrs. Smith is a little bit of a tongue twister. I wonder if they
I
thought of
agree.
that when
I
they
agree.
named
And
it.
one thing that's a little bit unfortunate is that Hyatt's best rate guarantee doesn't work for Mr. and Mrs. Smith properties. And so it's not a case that you could book with Mr. and Mrs. Smith, like get some kind of refundable rate, then go to Hyatt and then like have them match that if the individual property does end up charging less. Just because, yeah, the best rate guarantee policy doesn't apply to Mr. and Mrs. Smith, so.
That's a good point. All right, this is for everyone, but we're going to start with Stephen. Would love to know from the team, what's the best first class product you each have ever flown? Starting with Stephen.
I mean, I feel like I've only flown first class twice, and so it's basically between ANA and Emirates, and I'd probably have to give it to Emirates. We ended up booking it last minute, like a couple of hours before the flight, and so it was just my wife and I in the cabin, and so we just had it all to ourselves. So yeah, it was a fantastic experience. But when we did Party of Five and we all got to travel on ANA together, that was pretty fantastic too.
So, as usual, Stephen refuses to choose.
Oh no, I'm saying Emirates, but I'm just giving an
Okay.
honorable mention
All
to
right.
it.
All right. All right. Nick, how about you?
It's so tough because when you say favorite first class, it's like, well, I mean, it depends because there's first class service, first class food, first, I mean, just, I guess you said first class product. And so, you know, I guess that's tough. I think ANA was maybe the best overall product in the sense that, you know, great, awesome big screen TV, cool amenity kit, very wide, comfy seats. So I really, and great service. And I enjoyed that. And that was particularly special because, like Steven said, it was the five of us flying it. And when do you get a chance to fly first class with four of your friends? I mean, that's just not something that happens often. So that was probably my favorite first class memory, though. I will always love Singapore first class, and I remember a particular flight from Sydney to Singapore and Singapore Suites, the old Singapore Suites, and I just loved it. Service was great. They kept bringing around wine. I didn't need any more wine, and I said no. And the flight attendant said, "No, you have to try this. You can only get this usually in Australia, and it goes perfectly with what you ordered for dinner." And it was amazing. It was just so good. So, but you know, Emirates is so blingy. It's hard to pick. It's really honestly hard to pick. So I'm kind of hedging like Steven did. But if I have to pick one of them, I guess I'm gonna pick ANA. Oh man, but that Ceylon Champagne and Japan Airlines.
And Nick, yeah. And Nick, you didn't mention either Etihad First
I
Apartments
know.
or
Yeah.
Spirit's Big Front Seat. And I'm
Right.
surprised by the lack of mention of both of those.
Or
Both of them were
this
missing.
amazing
Yeah.
first class product you appear to be in right now.
I mean, it's yes, right. It's called a Chrysler Pacifica. Air Pacifica right here is what I'm flying today. No, but I mean, it's kind of a ridiculous thing to consider too, like which first class is best. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a smart question to ask if you're using your points, but you're like splitting hairs over really incredible experiences for the most part.
So Nick kind of says A and A. So how about you, Tim?
You know, that's a good question. I was gonna what would the opposite of concisify? Complexify? I was gonna complexify it by breaking it down into like favorite food and service and everything else. But I mean, so often I think it depends on the experience of the specific flight that you're on. Like I would rather have like when you're in. So okay, without hedging, without hedging, I'm just gonna say probably my best overall experience because of having the team around. It was probably ANA. Solo, it was probably Cathay Pacific. And that was years and years ago, and they don't necessarily have the best seat, but the food was incredible, the service was incredible, the food, the beverages were incredible, and I really love like their seat. It's like for a guy that's my size, there's just so much room to spread out and like go angular and do so. I mean, it was without having to necessarily leave and jump onto a different seat. So I really loved that flight. And that was on a flight from Hong Kong. So I mean, it was like 13 or 14 hours. It was a really long flight, and it just was sensational from beginning to end.
Nice. Greg, how about you?
Yeah, I'm having just as hard of a time deciding as Nick did, because there are so many great experiences. And when you think of one, then you think, well, yeah, but this other one had this aspect to it that was great. So I'm gonna mention two, because they weren't mentioned by the other guys. One was Etihad First Apartments, so which I thought was just incredible. And I've talked a lot about it, so I won't say more about that right now. But the other one was the old Singapore Suites. And that one was so special because it was the first time I had flown, not just first class. I'd flown some mediocre first class products before that. But to get into like a world's best type of first class, it was just a whole different ball game. And it was such an amazing experience, because I just didn't know. I didn't expect it to be as great as it was, and so the first time was, and had it been a different carrier, I'm sure I'd have a different answer.
It's hard to beat that first class flight. I have a similar, like Steven, I'm pretty sure I've only flown first class twice. I could be misremembering this. I'd have to ask Drew, but I think just Cathay first and ANA. And on the one hand, Cathay was like my first class flying experience. So it's hard to beat that, everything's novel and the flight attendants are commenting, like, you don't do this often. We're like, no, we're taking pictures of
Carrie
everything.
was like, finally, a seat big enough for me.
Exactly. To practice cartwheels in. But then ANA was like, I mean, just totally unbeatable. Not only just to be hanging out all together, obviously that was super fun, but I mean, the actual like product is amazing too. Like I almost slept too well. Like it was so much like a real bed that I didn't get to like wake up in the middle of the night and be like, oh, look at where I am. I like slept too soundly and almost entered like normal mundane dreaming world. But anyway, I think I'm gonna say ANA. All right,
We
so
should really quickly, as a reminder, we should. There's one of my favorite photos in the media library for frequent milers. We have this photo of Carrie in the Cathay first
Cathay, I
class
think.
seat. And
I have
the
pictured it
relative
immediately too.
proportions are absolutely hilarious.
I know, I
Let's
love
make
it.
sure that we put that photo into the post for this so
Before it even
that
went to Carrie, I pictured that. I'm sure the rest of you guys did
yeah,
too. I'm gonna see if I could
exactly.
find it.
You
I'll
guys
share
always
screen.
remember that
There you go.
picture, but for me, that's like me sitting on any chair. So not novel. I'm literally on a child's chair right now so that my feet could touch the chair, the ground. All right. So Nick, with the changes to Southwest, how does using a flight credit to pay the taxes and fees on points booking affect its flexibility?
Well, the flexibility of the points booking is like that's unaffected. So you can always cancel and get your points back up to like 10 minutes beforehand, and your points aren't subject to any kind of expiration or anything. The flight credit part of it for like the taxes, that is going to be subject to whatever the original expiration policy of the flight credit was. So, domestically, this is $5.60. So probably if your $5.60 expires, it's not going to be the end of the world. But if you were on an international flight where your taxes were 50 or 60 or 100 or whatever it might be, then it might be more of a concern. And so, yeah, if you use a flight credit that expires in August and you book your flight and then you cancel, book a flight for sometime after that, I guess. I don't know, then cancel it. I assume it's going to be subject to the original expiration, is what I'm trying to say, in a to concisify it, as Tim would have said. So anyway,
There it
it'll
is.
be subject to that expiration policy. Your points will go back into your account.
So
So there's Carrie finally in a seat big
so
enough for
glad.
her.
I think you could literally fit four or five of me.
And Carrie, you were what, 8 years old at this time?
I think I was like 25 or six or something like that. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I look like it's my first apartment. For those of you listening in podcast form, Greg did indeed find the picture of me in Cathay Pacific. All right. So, Greg, with half of the year, right? Greg. No, Tim. With half of the year gone by, what's on track so far with the Bonvoid Award of the Year? And I want you to answer this, you and Stephen to answer this, because I know Greg and Nick will get to when they're doing their podcast. I'm sure they'll do a Bonvoid segment at the end of the year. So, Tim and Stephen, what do you think is Bonvoid of the Year so far?
Well, I
Starting
think the
with Tim.
Bonvoid of the year was that Stephen moved to the UK. We all got screwed when that happens. Our whole country got screwed when Stephen moved back to the UK. What?
But here I am at like 2:40 a.m.
I know.
And
I was going to say
yeah,
we actually have
so right.
a
You're
more
on your
overlapping
best.
time zone now than we did when he was in the States.
For me, there's one clear answer, and that's Southwest and just everything.
Including
Like
Southwest.
Southwest, it's not just one thing. It's just the way that Southwest is just completely, from my mind, like taking an axe to everything that makes Southwest Southwest. And I've never seen something like that happen so quickly. And there's a lot of other good ones. Like I was thinking Hilton raising their maximum redemptions, and but at first place would be Stephen moving to the UK. Second place would just be Southwest and all of their myriad downward spot, the myriad downward spiral that they have been involved in.
Unsouthwesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you, Stephen?
I mean, I would have assumed that Southwest would have had this wrapped up like fairly early on in the year, but it feels like Chase is coming back into the chase. And they're like, I wrote just in a post earlier today that it feels like they're really trying hard to wrap up Bonvoid of the Year. Just because the relaunch of the Sapphire Reserve card hasn't been amazing. Like they've increased the annual fee, changed it from like 3x on all travel to 4x on only flight and hotels. They've coupon bookified it. They've changed the 1.5 cent redemptions. They said one thing about whether or not you'd be able to get the card if you have a preferred card, and it seems to mostly be the opposite. And there's like a whole bunch of other things. Like they've been opening cards for people who had like asked them to like not open the cards for them, and just all kinds of other stuff. And it's just all been like a big old mess. So if I think on balance, Southwest probably will still win it, but Chase still has another 6 months of the year to be able to pull it out of the bag. And the way things have been going, I'm starting to have faith in them. So we'll see by the end of the year.
Anti-faith. At what point do we change the word Bonvoy and instead say like the really southwesting of us, or
Southwest.
like, you know?
I feel like Marriott still like manages that consistent level of voidness that it
Oh, they
still
do.
deserves the
Special
like being
place.
named, having the award named after it.
There's actually an
Fair
Urban
enough.
Dictionary entry for Bonvoid now.
No.
Yeah, it's like Bonvoid is effectively getting screwed.
No way, really?
There should be. That's good.
Did we invent that term, or do I just think that because I hear the segment every week on the podcast?
So I
I don't
think
know.
someone else came up with that ages ago.
Yeah, I don't think we coined it.
Darn it. All
Because
right.
someone ended up registering like Bonvoid.com like pretty soon after they
Yeah.
launched it, so that they could like list all the people's complaints. So yeah, it wasn't us, but we still get to make good use of it.
Man, sometimes I love the internet. All right. Greg, speaking of Chase, you all say Chase points are great for Hyatts. What are each of your top three Hyatt properties in Asia and Europe? So, Greg, I'm gonna leave this question to you just so we can get to more questions instead of everybody.
So I don't have a top three properties in Asia and Europe with Hyatt. So
How about top three
I can't really.
Hyatts?
Yeah, it's hard because what I love about Hyatt, it's not necessarily that there are specific properties that I love. There are some. Like I love the Alila Ventana Big Sur. It's been many, many years since I was there, but staying at the Park Hyatt in Paris, and also the one in Zurich was amazing. But when we go on and on about it, it's about the consistency of the great value you can get from the points, the consistency of the great elite benefits they give you if you have top tier elite status, things like that, as opposed to, zeroing in on specific properties in general.
Okay, so it's not so much about the destination property kind of experience, so much as like just a consistently good experience whenever you do get to a Hyatt property and the value.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say all Hyatt properties, but much
Yeah.
more consistent than other brands. Yeah.
Any of the rest of you have one specific Hyatt property that sticks out in your mind in Europe or Asia? If not, we'll move on to
Well,
next
I
question
was
for
just there
Stephen.
was one that I and I haven't actually written the review for it yet, but there's a Hyatt Regency in Okinawa called the Hyatt Regency Saragaki Island that it's not even a it's not like a high category Hyatt. It's not something that's a destination thing. But man, I love that place. It's on its own island that's separated by a bridge from the mainland. So you're completely surrounded by black rocks. The suite there was one of the just most marvelous views and experiences I've ever had from a suite. The design is beautiful. The food is incredible. The people are great. It's so the design of the pools and the hotels is it's really unique. And I mean, I think it's a category five, if I remember correctly. So it's not necessarily, but that was just a recent one that I was blown away by. That if it were anywhere but Okinawa, if it was somewhere that was easier to get to, it would be a destination property, I think, for people.
Yeah.
That's really cool to hear. I've looked at that place a couple of times and been interested, but we haven't made a trip to Okinawa work yet. So that's good to know for the future. The Hyatt Regency Hakone, which is near Mount Fuji, is often referred to as like a hidden Park Hyatt because it has more of a Park Hyatt feel, even though it's branded as a Hyatt Regency. And I really liked that one because again, it did have that higher end, doesn't feel anything like a Regency, beautiful views, good service. But I was only there for a short time, a couple of nights, I think. And that was several years back. So that's not a recent review. Park Hyatt Vienna in Europe is probably my favorite out of the current Hyatts that I've been to in Europe, but I don't have a huge long list like Greg said. So
I'm going to add one into the hat. The Park Hyatt Shanghai is in the Jin Mao Tower, which used to be at one point the tallest tower in, I forget, Asia or the world, but I mean, it isn't anymore. But it's from the 79th to 93rd floor, and you just get a view of the tallest buildings in the world from a tallest building of the world. And it's like, an incredible hotel anyway. I'm going to add that into the mix. All right, unless there's anything else to add, I will move on to a question for Stephen. Anything else? All right, Stephen, this person booked a flight from Lisbon to Atlanta on Delta. KLM was the carrier, even though it was ticketed on Delta. I can't get them to give me my SkyMiles. Any idea how to get these posted?
I mean, I'm assuming that they've tried claiming their missing miles through Delta.com. So that would obviously be the first place to go. If they've tried doing that and that's when they're saying that they can't get the SkyMiles, then that seems a little bit weird. Only things I can think is that either A, it was a type of fare that wasn't eligible for earning miles. Another thing might be that if some one of your other loyalty program numbers got attached to the reservation, like if you somehow ended up with a KLM Flying Blue account number registered against that, then it might have already posted to that account, in which case I think you're going to be out of luck. So I've not heard of people being able to get stuff like that reversed and then credited to a different option. Anyone else have any thoughts on other reasons? Because it seems weird that they would be denied like for a legitimate transaction for SkyMiles, so it feels like there would be something.
Heard in the past of people like if you bring up your booking while you're logged in at like KLM or Air France, that sometimes it messes with it and it associates your Flying Blue number with it. But I don't have direct experience with that myself.
And like something else that could potentially have happened before, I had this with the United flight where I'd done I think it was an ANA status match, and so I'd flown on United, and then but then to be able to get into a lounge, I had shown my ANA status, and when doing that, they ended up moving over my ANA number to that reservation, even though it wasn't on there before, in order to get into the lounge, and so it ended up crediting to my ANA account rather than my United Mileage Plus account. So Like that's again a very niche situation where I can't imagine that would have happened in this circumstance, but you never know that, yeah. Other like minor kind of reasons like that could be why it's happened.
And if you have a niche thing like that, maybe FMI is another good place to ask something like that. The Frequent Mileer Insiders. Join that if you haven't already and like this video. All right.
And it's on Facebook, by the way.
Wait, only me
Yes.
again, or is this everyone again?
Oh, that one was just for you. This one is for Nick only. Has Nick set up a professional mic on arm inside of his car?
That's right. Well, I'll try and get the picture. Well, I sent the picture, so I'll try and get the picture out on social media. Yeah, so we're very kind of up in the air as to what we were doing for 4th of July weekend here, and made a very late in the day decision today to drive somewhere, and got to the hotel and checked in, and then after we checked in and ordered dinner via Uber Eats, I was like, oh yeah, that's right. The reason we weren't leaving today originally is because we have Ask Us Anything tonight. And so then I didn't have a space for it because the kids are, of course, asleep in the hotel. So I said, you know what? I bet I can rig this up to work in the minivan. So yeah, we've got TV screens in our minivan. And so the camera is like sitting on top of the TV screen. I've got a light on a stand here. I have the arm is on the like armrest of the seat next to me in the van, barely hanging in there. I'm concerned if I touch it, it's going to fall off of that. And the laptop is on an Amazon box, actually, kind of like sort of down and in front of me. So yeah, I mean, I've got this whole setup here. It kind of looks professional, right? What do you think?
These guys frequently will text me pictures of how they're filming the podcast. This is by far the craziest one. So, Nick, you
Luckily,
definitely
the
have
front
to.
seat moves forward really far in the minivan because this has these stow-and-go seats that go down in the so like I could create the space necessary. This worked, I
It's
think, right?
a bit of a Where's Waldo of like, can you find all the pieces that make this work for Nick? All right. Let's try to fit in one last question. I'm gonna say this is a free for all, but we're gonna start with Tim. Does Chase the Edit and Amex FHR make Hotel Elite status obsolete?
So my short answer is no. The reason, so the kind of the framing for this question is that both the Edit and FHR are meant to provide elite-like benefits for booking through their respective platforms. So in the case of Fine Hotels and Resorts or FHR, that's Amex. In the case of the Edit, which is the worst name for a luxury hotel program in the world. Anyway, without going down that, I have a The Edit booking. By the way,
AV
That
edit.
sounds so classy, Tim.
Yeah.
Isn't that
That
great? You really will find luxury at the
because
edit.
that's you want an edited hotel for your
Oh my
luxury
gosh.
experiences.
Something is
If you like the original, you should catch the edit. But
I
so just
really
as an
feel.
example, I could say, so like I'm a Hyatt globalist and the edit has a lot of Hyatt properties. So, and I was actually just going through this the other day because I was trying to burn my first half of the year edit credit from my new Sapphire Reserve before the 30th. So I was trying to use it, and it was difficult. But so I actually was looking at a lot of these properties, and so for instance, like going to LA, there's only probably, I don't know, I'm gonna guess maybe th three Hyatt properties out of the 40 that are available that are on the edit. So first of all, if I'm just going for the edit for my elite benefits, now I'm narrowed down to three properties as opposed to 40. So right there. All of them were more expensive in points than it would be to book it directly through Hyatt. Now that isn't always the case. There are places, there are times, and I have found stuff where it's actually cheaper. I was actually just looking at Miami Beach today as well on the edit, and every single one was probably double the points price that it was that I could book on Hyatt directly. So the edit price was double. But then, and I hadn't even thought about this, this is like, so when I book through Hyatt, I'm guaranteed free parking. Not so with the edit. So that immediately on all three of those properties in LA, because we were going to have a car with us, amounted to about $150 surcharge for a weekend to use the edit as opposed to Hyatt. Now, the Hyatt guarantees me a 4 p.m. checkout. So I know that for my 6 p.m. flight, I can just go and do the 4 p.m. checkout. The edit's based on availability. Now, I have no idea how much they give you that based on Fine Hotels and Resorts is very consistent, but Fine Hotels and Resorts also doesn't provide near the value booking for points that the edit does, because the edit you get 2 cents per point, whereas fine hotels and resorts, if you're using points, you're only getting 1 cent per point for the most part. So, and then early check-in, the same thing, it's based on availability. So I think that the things are like these, both of them provide really cool opportunities in some ways to maximize, especially if you have these credits. And I think what makes the edit a little more compelling as a reasonable, consistent alternative is that it actually provides more benefit, more value when you're using points, because you're getting 2 cents per point on effectively all of the bookings. And that can actually make it competitive with Hyatt oftentimes. However, the benefits in my mind, they're not necessarily exactly the same. However, there's times that it actually could be a good replacement, but an overall replacement, I don't think so.
Not for you anyway.
Now, we do have a post, getting the luxury experience or the elite experience without elite status, that compares a whole bunch of the different programs. But now that this has come up, I realize I need to edit to add the edit.
They have the edit.
The edit
Does the
didn't
edit
get the
add any
edit.
credit? Then
probably need to add Capital One's version of it
don't
too.
forget it.
And who knows how
Right.
many others there are out there.
Yeah. I don't know what's in there and what's not now,
Good reminder to
but yeah,
update.
there are a bunch of those out there.
Yeah.
Not
Yeah.
just the
So
edit and FHA.
to me, the big picture is that they're asking, like, do these programs that guarantee benefits like free breakfast and other stuff, replace the idea of chasing elite status? Because you can just book through these platforms and get those elite-like perks. And Tim's answer was a good way of saying, well, no, it's not as good as what you get through Hyatt's top-tier elite, but Hyatt's kind of an exception in what kind of benefits it provides at the top tier. If you're looking at just booking hotels in general and getting benefits that are like what you would get if you had IHG top status, or like what you'd get if you had Marriott high level status and happened to be at a Marriott that actually gives you the benefits you're supposed to get, that combination is rare.
But there's also tons of
Then,
properties that aren't on there. Like, I was at the Marriott in Ithaca
yeah, it's
last
so
week. I didn't
limited.
get those
Oh yeah,
benefits,
no,
but
absolutely. But I mean, that's
right.
also true if you're just stuck within a
Yeah,
particular
that's true. Yeah.
hotel program. Like, so if you're like, well, I have elite status with Hyatt, then you're stuck with just Hyatts, and Hyatts are not everywhere. So this is like, I bet you could find nice hotels at a lot more locations around the world than you could if you just stick within one hotel chain
Yeah.
by going through these programs.
That would be a good, that would be a fun post.
I was just going to
Well,
say, I think
all of
this would
that
make a
said,
good,
all that said, I still think the answer is no. It doesn't replace elite status, because what elite status gives us, what we like to do is get great value for our points. And yes, the edit gives us an opportunity to sometimes get great value for our points, but not always. And Amex Fine Hotels and Resorts never does. So what we like to do with Marriott, with Hyatt, with IHG, whatever, we like to get great value for our points. And then when you're getting that great value, if you have elite status, you get a better experience, you get free parking, you get whatever
Right.
the program allows because of your status. Those are on top of each other, and that combination is what we really dig. If you All that said, I mean, I do think there's value for people who are willing to pay for hotel stays, don't want to bother with trying to get
Right.
great value for your points and all that. There's a lot of value in these programs, I think.
All right, I'm gonna have to cut us off there before YouTube does. And any other thoughts that we had left on that? Well, let's save it for a coffee break. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you the first Wednesday of every month. Ask us anything. You can ask us anything here, as we've demonstrated. So we'll see you next time.
Bye,
Thank
all.
you. Good morning, everyone.
Hi, I'm David Brody, co-host of the Travel in 10 podcast. Together, myself and my co-host Tim Johnson have traveled to over 150 countries around the world and all seven continents. Now we're sharing our favorite places, some of our best tips and experiences from all around the world in just 10 minutes on Travel in 10. Join us at voyescape.com.
I'm Pauline Frommer. I've spent most of my life writing, talking, and thinking about travel. Not just where to go, but how to go in a way that's meaningful. On the Frommer's Travel Show, we explore the trends, people, and ideas shaping how we see the world. If you care about the why as much as the where, I hope you'll join me. You can find new episodes weekly at voyescape.com.